This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hey, it's Helen Farmer with you. Great to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Talking children's health, parenting, education, and asking, where do your school fees go? That's the big question we put to education consultant Ashwin Asimal from LEK. And getting your thoughts on what's good value and getting his tips on what trends we can expect in education moving forward. Turning our attentions as well to social media, TikTok challenges and hoaxes are reaching next levels. People going crazy for the likes and the follows, and it's often getting dangerous. So we were speaking to family psychologist Matavol Knu of Thrive Wellbeing Centre and getting the thoughts of media expert Tracy Grant about what the kind of entertainment this generation consumes. Dr. Michael Lubso was on hand talking about what we need to be aware of when it comes to family travel in light of that new COVID-19 strain. Is it going to be a health problem or a practicality problem? And in conversation with five-year-old Kiara Kaur, she broke records recently for reading books. Over 100, in fact, and she's read more than 2,000. She's also written her own and is the world's youngest TEDx speaker. She was sharing her experiences in conversation with her mum, Dr. Mahendra, about when her love of learning started.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is nearly the end of term one. Goodness me. And, you know, parents are planning to go on holiday, hopefully, keeping the kids busy during the break and also getting ready to sign that cheque, hand it over to our children's school. Term two fees are coming up and it is a huge, significant chunk of the family income. Speaking now to a man who's giving us some insider info on where that money actually goes. Joining us on Microsoft Teams is Ashwin Asimal, the head of LEK Consulting's Global Education Practice. They're an education consultancy and have recently come out with a report on enrolment levels here in the UAE. Now, Ashwin, before we delve into the issue of school fees, let's talk about that report first. Your headline says that the K-12 education sector, Dubai and Abu Dhabi, is set for 2-3% growth in enrolment in the next 10 years. So do you predict more families are going to be moving to the UAE in the next decade? Well, tell us more.
Thanks, Ella. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
And happy to share some more insights into the report. And so we've been covering the market in the UAE with a focus on Dubai and Abu Dhabi for the best part of a decade. And we've seen through a number of shocks in the market, the Great Recession in 2008, and various mini recessions that the city has experienced. The education market's very resilient and it's bounced back quite strongly. We expect to see the same happening post-pandemic. And the numbers already that we see for the upcoming academic year are very, very strong. Schools are reporting growth in their overall numbers after a small decline during the academic year 2021. So there is a growth in overall enrollments with new families coming in. And a number of families are migrating from Europe. We can see families migrating from India and from Lebanon. And that's driving demand for high-quality education in Dubai, which is something Dubai is very well known for. And we see the outlook is quite positive, as it has always been when Dubai has gone through a shock, whether it's been the Great Recession or anything else.
We've also seen a number of schools being built and opening as well from the likes of RGS Guildford, New Australian School as well. And what impact is that having on the market, do you think?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the KHDA, who regulate the sector, have been very clear for the last decade, which is they want to ensure that they create an environment where they promote choice, quality and affordability for every parent that's coming to Dubai. And while you'll hear some very high profile names such as RGS and in the past NLCS and Dwight and Brighton, which are very reputed names from other parts of the world, there are also many other schools that are opening up that provide that choice and that quality to parents. So I think that is a concerted effort that the KHD has taken. And, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, if a parent came to Dubai, they'd be struggling to find a spot for their child sometimes. But now, when we look at the data, pretty much in every curriculum and every price point, you could find a quality seat for your child.
Okay, well, let us know your experiences. Assessments around the corner as well for little ones going into those FS levels. I remember it not even fondly. I remember it with tears, having a, an assessment on a two-year-old. We're going to be talking next about some of the challenges that new schools might face when it comes to opening here. So let us know your thoughts. Shanann's saying, schools here are pretty decent and you do get your money's worth, but with three kids and another one on the way, don't think we'll be able to survive financially and may need to look at moving kids to another school that is more affordable. Shanann, thank you for that. Joined now by Ashrin Asamo, the head of LEK Consulting Global Education Practice.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking education, and it is that time of the academic year. We need to pay term two fees. Yeah, great. Joined now by Ashrin Aswell. He is the head of LEK's Consulting Global Education Practice. You can tell it's Sunday. And he has got some insider information about how those school fees are structured, where our money actually goes. So parents, if you've got any questions at all for Ashrin, or you want to share your thoughts on, you know, education styles and standards, but also prices as well. So, you know, the majority of schools here are private, and that is great, as you said earlier, Ashrin, in terms of that offering as much choice as possible to the public, both across a curriculum and different price brackets. Can you talk us through the breakdown of school fees when it comes to structuring that? You know, where, what kind of percentages going on staff, training, land rate, facilities, and ultimately, does if you pay peanuts, do you get monkeys?
Yeah, and school fees are a very emotive subject in most of the markets we work in, and I think there's a lot of back and forth, especially in Dubai, around how the private sector structures their fees. But essentially, a school business, it is a business, but 60% of their operating costs are teachers. And teachers are, you know, they're what really drives the quality at a school. And, you know, the most of the operators in Dubai are committed to recruiting the best teachers across the world. And you're competing in a global workforce, because teachers are very mobile and they can move to any parts of Asia, Europe. So there is competition for that workforce. And those teacher costs have been rising year on year. And that's about 60% of your operating costs. Mm-hmm. The remaining about 30% of it is the land and the rentals. And if you look around Dubai and compare the kind of infrastructure that you have in your schools relative to other markets that, that we see, it's one of the best best quality infrastructures, you know, at every level, whether you're paying, you know, 25,000 dirhams or 75,000 dirhams. So that's where most of the costs go in. And over the last year or two, what the schools have been investing in and spending a lot of their money on is around the health and safety protocols associated with getting kids back to school, which again has added to more cost, and with getting students online. And I think when you speak to most of the headmasters like we do, they have realized that they may need to be online again.
I refuse to acknowledge this as being a reality. Well, lots of questions.
None of us really want that, no. But it is something that the schools are preparing themselves for, and they're putting some money behind it.
Oh, goodness me. Great question from Lourdes here on 4001, saying, are fees tied to a school's ranking? Could you explain when and how a school is allowed a tuition fee increase by the KHDA? Great question there. What would you advise there?
Yeah, so when a new school opens up, they can come in at the price point that they feel that they can compete at in the market. And the market is very competitive, so they will always seek to be priced at a level where they can seek to attract the maximum number of enrollments. So the market operates well there. And then when it comes to fee increases, it depends on the quality rating that you get. And KHDA conducts an annual quality assurance program and inspection. And then the increase is linked to the rating that you get and a measurement of inflation that is published by the Dubai Statistics Center. And that is typically, the Dubai Statistics Center have had ranges of 0 to 3% over the last few years. I think one year there was a minus 0.1%, but essentially school fee increases have remained quite muted over the last few years.
Well, Haji's saying, we know at the end of the day, running a school is a business endeavour. Are schools more considerate of parents' financial situation now? What ways they're trying to help? And we did see this, you know, during that first lockdown where school fees were perhaps being reduced. We saw many schools reducing by about 20%, some choosing not to at all. Do you feel like schools are becoming more flexible when it comes to payment plans even, or are we seeing any kind of reduction in fees overall?
Yeah, I think at an overall level, and we've analysed this market for the best part of a decade, you would see that the availability of seats at price points that, and again, I'm looking at it in dollar terms, $5,000 or $6,000, that segment has grown quite strongly in terms of offering. So if a parent feels that they can't afford a British curriculum school at $10,000 or $15,000, there are choices that allow them to dip down into to lower price points. And I think that's one of the great things about Dubai, that you can get a very quality education at price points that you couldn't get elsewhere in the world.
I wanted to ask you about one thing you mentioned in the report, which was that premium schools have remained strong. You know, they've been very resilient. When you talk about premium schools, what kind of school fee range are you talking about, and why do you think they have been so resilient, especially in light of the last couple of years, Ashwin?
Yeah, so we're looking at things like sort of 55,000 dirhams plus. Those are that's what we describe as premium. And they tend to be resilient because I think typically the parents that are at those schools tend to have a little bit more savings, and they can absorb shocks like, a few months of unemployment. And they tend to be professionals that tend to find employment pretty quickly after that. The budget schools, where parents are maybe struggling to find jobs if they've been laid off, and many of these are Indian curriculum schools at the budget end. Some of the times the families go back and the main, the father or the mother stays back in Dubai. And that's seen a big decline in enrollments over the last few years.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking education this hour, and Ashwin Asimal, the head of LEK's Consulting Global Education Practice, joining us, talking about how school fees are structured, talking about quality of education here in the UAE, and I'm hoping he's going to give us some predictions too of what we can be seeing unfold over the next couple of years. A great question here from Anita, saying, how does the UAE educational sector compare to others? We might think fees are high here, but parents in expat countries like Hong Kong and Singapore are probably in the same boat. There's been much discussion around this in terms of how does the UAE's education offering stack up internationally. What would you say as someone who's worked in this field for a number of years, Ashwin?
Yeah, it's a question that comes up quite a bit. And Dubai, and I'm just sharing some statistics from some of the latest work that we've done. It's interesting that 65% of the market, 65% of the enrollments today sit in schools below 35,000 dirhams. And that's something that you don't really see in any other market. And I think your listener mentioned Singapore and Hong Kong. And in fact, Singapore is trying to emulate some of the success that they've seen in Dubai by encouraging more mid-price schools to come into that market, because pretty much every school in international school in Singapore is priced at above $15,000. So again, I think the success of Dubai in terms of building very high quality mid-priced offerings is something that the other markets are seeking to emulate.
Renny saying, just want to say many schools have offered discounts to parents who've lost jobs. So great to say we're seeing a bit of flexibility in there. And, you know, when we've discussed in the show debt and people desperately wanting to stay in the UAE but not being able to do that. You know, one thing we say time and time again is, you know, go to your bank, talk about what you can do. And the same thing goes for schools. You know, I've got a number of friends who have said, this is what we can afford, and we cannot afford to pay a term cheque. It's going to be monthly. I get paid monthly, so you're going to get paid monthly. And I think a lot of people have been quite pleasantly surprised by how receptive schools have been to that. And maybe it goes back to, you know, when I first moved here, it was a case of, yep, you pay your cheque for your rent, one cheque for a year of rent, and that's becoming less and less frequent now. Ashwin, what if you were going to put your, you know, get your crystal ball out. What would you say, any predictions really in terms of the types of schools we can expect to be opening, in terms of curriculum and budget, and ultimately what do you think the offering is going to be like over the next few years?
Yeah, I think it'll be much the same, actually. I wish I could say something brilliant about some massive innovation that will happen, but I think what will continue to happen with the support of the KHDA is the growth of really high quality operators coming into the market, some brands, of course, but more choice in terms of curriculum, a greater focus on high quality technology, not only to deal with the pandemic resurgence of the pandemic, but in terms of hybrid offerings as well. So parents being allowed to support their children through technology after school, and more flexible education as well. So I think Dubai's done a phenomenal job of bringing that range of curricula, the range of price points, some amazing brands, and I think that will continue to happen over the next few years.
Can I ask you about the brands? Because as we've kind of mentioned, there have been some the prestigious names coming to the UAE of late. What happens in terms of quality control from the original brand? Is it a kind of a franchise situation? How much of it is really the heart and soul of that original school?
Yeah, it's not a franchise situation in that the brands are very much working very closely with the operator, the investor in Dubai locally. So, for example, you've mentioned RGS. RGS has recruited many of their team from the UK. And in fact, NLCS, which is another well-known British brand and IB school, their founding headmaster was the undermaster, Dan Lewis, at NLCS's London campus. So it's not a franchise. It's very much a strong partnership between the local investor operator, real estate provider, and the home school.
And lastly, as I said, we are getting to that assessment time for many parents whose children, their babies, might be starting school in September. What do you think some of the questions parents could be asking of these schools to make sure they're making the right choice when you are spending a significant amount of your income, and they're, of course, spending a significant amount of their day there?
Yeah, I think, now I'm speaking as a parent rather than
you have two hats on today. So let's put your dad hat on.
I'm actually going through the process myself. For me, I think the most important thing to do is spend time with the teachers that will be teaching your child, and spend time with the head of primary and learn what their strategy is. What do they want to do with the school? It's, when you walk around the school, you'll always get a great feeling. And always try and go to the school when it's on, when it's operational, and you get a good sense of the energy there. But for me, speaking to the folks that are running the school, and not the headmaster, but the teachers that will be teaching your child, and then to other parents, is very important. So once you know someone who's, unquote, been there and consume the product, you'll get a much better sense of whether this is suitable for your child.
And I think that's a really good point. Sometimes the best school in the city might not be a good match for your child or for you as a family and your ethos and your values. So there is one for everyone. Sometimes it just feels like a bit of a process to find it. And if anyone wants to read this report more in depth from LEK Ashwin, where can people find it and ultimately get their heads around some of the data that you've established?
Yeah, it'll be available on our website, lek.com. And if listeners want to get in touch with you, we're happy to share it with whoever wants to receive it. We can email it to them as well.
There you go, 4001. If you'd like a copy of that report, we can connect you with the team at LEK Consulting. Ashwin, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. All the best with school hunting. I'm sure you're the one that had master's dread coming through the door with your questions. So hope it all goes well.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking TikTok this afternoon, this hot social media app can, of course, foster creativity, socialisation, education. But parents and kids need to know the risks. While much of TikTok is harmless fun, there are some real concerns about kids using the app. There are some online challenges and dares that can be dangerous or even fatal. Here are a few of them. The milk crate challenge. This involves stacking several milk crates up into a stair formation and attempting to climb to the top. TikTokers are ending up in the doctor's surgery as a result of this. A huge number of injuries. There's also the dry scoop challenge. This involves taking a scoop of pre-workout powder before exercising. Sounds disgusting. Many have choked. One woman ended up in hospital after a heart attack. And there's the full face wax. Videos circulating of men being completely covered in wax, and beauticians spoke out against this, saying it could suffocate people, plus painful. So if you are a parent of a teen, a tween, TikTok is probably part of your family's life. And for those not in the know, this is where you can go and create lip syncing, dancing videos, but there's also a direct message feature. It invites live streaming and public commenting. And TikTok has recently launched a global report to better understand young people's engagement with potentially harmful challenges and hoaxes at the crux. The survey studied more than 10,000 people, consulted experts from around the world, and the report found that 31% of teens exposed to these hoaxes have had a negative impact on their lives. 63% said that impact was on their mental health. So as a result, TikTok has strengthened protection efforts, but is it enough? We're joined now by systemic family psychotherapist Massa Velkanu from the Thrive Wellbeing Centre to talk about some of the dangers and ultimately how to talk to our kids about them without it resulting in an all-out rebellion. Massa, thank you so much for being with us. And I would like to point out that actually many experts such as yourself, and it can also lawyers, artists, use this platform for spreading information, and it can be incredibly useful in that. But what are some of the dangers of a platform like TikTok?
We certainly have a decent number of research and experience regarding the impact of using social media, and TikTok is no exception, the impact on our mental health today. Dangers of social platforms are like numerous. I don't even know where to start. So first we can talk about influence that comes from peer group, and we know people have a tendency of imitating. So social behaviors are proven to be like a virus, very highly contagious, which is much stronger over the social media, because if you have a specific peer group in real life where children have to interact in person, They have empathy towards each other, even if there are some bullying or bad influences. There is also, you know, fear or care or other emotions rising from a direct contact with another human being. Mm-hmm. While using online platforms, you don't have this set of emotions and you don't have to worry about these things. Then this, we can talk about companies that are targeting teenagers and other commercial influences that are not necessarily good for our children. And our children are at mercy of companies that are targeting their need, or even worse, they are creating their need. Then we have a danger of comparing. The most certain way to make yourself absolutely miserable and make your life harder is to compare yourself. We do it in our everyday life, but social media took it to completely another level. Mm-hmm. So comparing has a huge impact on a person's mental health, and as we mentioned, teenagers in specific are extremely vulnerable group that gets the most affected. And this is only from the point of the person who is following the social media. And if we are talking about the person who is posting on social media, there is a completely other set of problems. So we have a rising teenage stars, TikTok stars, that are facing a lot of upcoming difficulties, and I'm sure they will face many, many mental health challenges. So getting likes and being in the center of attention is highly addictive experience. So we have to understand that every baby, each one of us, is born with a very narcissistic state of mind, and this is completely normal. Mm-hmm. But as the baby becomes a child, it realizes the limitations of this self-centered universe. And the pain of reality and existence is the one that is making a child developing and maturing their brain, their mind, their soul. So without this pain, knowing that the world is not going as we want it to go.
Not revolving around you. Yeah.
Not revolving around us. We are starting to become less self-centered, narcissistic, and then we are able to progress, learn, love, and create.
Massa Velkanu, a systemic family psychotherapist at Thrive Wellbeing Centre, talking about the dangers of TikTok and other social media platforms. One of them is developing narcissistic tendencies.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking TikTok this afternoon. The dangers of them. One of them is, yes, the physical challenges, running through fences and all that craziness. But it's probably also turning your child into a narcissist. Massa Valkanu is a systemic family psychotherapist at Thrive. Many kids on TikTok are taking on these dangerous challenges for the likes and the follows. Here's what she has to say on that.
We have to work on developing critical thinking. And we have to start from, from the family, from the parent and the child relationship. So maybe even to, raise children not solely by authority, but by strengthening their ability to think and to tell the right and the wrong. And just to, understand that the world they see on media platforms are not directly the truth. I think it's called a hoax these days. So they're like intentionally made up lies and stories that are just there on social media, which are not even real. But we don't know if young children can understand that.
It's really hard as a parent to try and teach these lessons to our kids when they are bombarded constantly, especially that kind of age where they might have just had, got their first mobile phone and everyone in their class and their friendship group is posting and sharing and probably has a secret account. But how can parents talk to their teens and tweens, advising them of the dangers without it becoming something to rebel against?
We already know that children don't do what they are told, but they follow the example. So the first step is that we are balanced in our use of social media, that they can see that we are not addicted, that we are not oversharing, posting, that we are not seeking this validation and attention, and that we don't believe everything that we see there. Parents should not forget that they are the ones who are responsible and they hold the power. So this power distribution is lately a bit neglected because parents seek validation from their children and do everything for them to feel that their children like them. But they have to be wiser and see the bigger picture, which means that if you see your child unhappy today because, all his friends have are using this app and doing this and doing that, but we have to kind of hold it because that is better for him. That is better for his development. So frustration is very important in development, and you have to learn to feel it and tolerate it, and for your child to feel the frustration and learn how to tolerate. Risky behavior are a part of teenagers that are very specific for this period, but we have to, talk to our children more and just try to be there for them and try to listen how they think and maybe, find some space where we can say something that they will find relatable.
What about if our child sees something online that was upsetting to them? How best to, talk to our children, making sure they're okay?
Experiences are lessons and we should appreciate them as such. I mean, of course, it's not preferable to experience trauma in your life, but if you already do, there is an opportunity to make something valuable out of it, like a shell that is making a pearl from the dust. We should just, as parents, help them digest, let them explain what they saw, heard, experienced, help them understand and find a lesson for growth. And also maybe teach them that curiosity must have some limits in order for us to stay safe. Maybe it's hard for us, but just listen to what happened and not run away from it. Not like, oh, forget it, don't talk about this anymore. Let's just, bury it down. No, to the opposite. Let's go through it once more. Let's go through it together again. And let's try to get the lesson, extract the wisdom from it.
Thank you so much for your time today, Massa. Really, really appreciate it. And you can be found at Thrive Wellbeing Centre. We
are family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We've been talking social media, TikTok, and lots of videos circulating online. The content of these might seem bizarre to us as adults, but this is the kind of content that the new generation wants. Unfortunately, some of the TikTok challenges are getting increasingly dangerous and sadly fatal in a number of situations. But to help us understand the kind of entertainment, the content that Gen Zers like, and the reason behind this is Tracy Grant. She's the Vice President of Content and Channels Middle East at Viacom International Media Network in MENA. She's in charge of those big entertainment names such as Paramount Plus, MTV, Nickelodeon, Nick Jr., Nicktoons and Comedy Central. Tracy, thank you for joining us this afternoon. I'm delighted to have a guest in studio. Great to have you with us.
It's really nice to be here. Thanks so much.
Now, you are a mum of three. Your kids are a bit older than mine, their age between 10 and 15. And just hearing there from our psychologist talking about, you know, how challenging it can be to talk to our kids about social media and how to use it responsibly. And because I know this is just around the corner for me, I'm curious, because your kids are between 10 and 15, what kind of guidelines, I don't want to say rules, but what kind of conversations have you put in place around social media usage for that age group?
Well, it's a big question,
it's
Helen,
a minefield.
And even if professionally I know a lot about content, I think that when you have a family that you're kind of experiencing it with them for the first time, mm-hmm. a lot of the times the new platforms come on and you don't use them, you have to download them, you know, simultaneously with them to kind of track. I hope they're not listening because they'll know all my secrets. I think that it's an industry that's evolving really, really quickly, right? And as someone who works in the industry but also is a parent, I think it's really important that you understand what's going on, what's out there.
Because otherwise that education gap just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And unfortunately, not to go to a dark place, but that's, you know, where often bad things can happen. It's because of silence and lack of understanding and ignorance that predators are able to, you know, succeed.
Yeah, there can be a big disconnect. I mean, my girls constantly talk in memes and quotes that my husband and I kind of frown and have no idea what they're talking about. But I think it's, you know, there are certain guidelines we follow at home. Very simple, you know, if you don't want your head teacher or your granny to see it, don't post it.
Good.
I think that's
great life lesson.
A really easy one for everyone to. And I'm not, you know, I think that it's a world that opens up to them that is really positive in a lot of ways as well. They get to experience so many things that perhaps we didn't when I'm older than you, like two or three channels to choose from. And they can really experience travel and health and lifestyle and, you know, be inspired in a whole variety of different ways. But you have to have kind of the guiding principles of it too, alongside that.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point that, you know, social media isn't this kind of agent for evil. There is a lot of incredible social connections, education, people finding their tribe through that. But, you know, it's like, you know, we were taught how to cross the road or put a seatbelt on. And, you know, now parents and schools have a big responsibility on teaching online safety as well. And you are here with your kind of content hat on as well. You've got decades of experience. And you mentioned there two or three channels. I told my kids recently that we had four channels to choose from. And I mean, I remember getting up early and there being nothing on TV, like literally the kind of the and their little faces were completely bamboozled by this concept because, you know, often it's TV on demand through streaming. It is, you know, multi-channel choice. But in terms of the actual content, the programming that's going out for age groups, let's say from kind of, you know, 3 to 13, how do you think it has changed in the last few decades?
I think consumption has changed massively. So what screen, you know, if I say to mine, we didn't have iPads or the internet, you know, their mind is actually blown because you can't imagine it now. But I think that the content that is available to them now, particularly from big brands, so if we talk about Nickelodeon, for instance, you can access that content in any form you want. So whether it's on social, YouTube, on TV channels, on an app, you know, there are the consumption is varied dependent on where you are and what you're doing. But I think that those big brands are the kind of gatekeepers and holders of really authentic content that they, you know, that is safe to watch, is entertaining, but also has an edutainment kind of element to it. And those, I think, for me, are the safe spaces.
Yeah. There is a comfort to that because, you know, so much goes into developing a show. I actually questioned that from Mindy, saying what kind of research goes into creating a show for kids? You know, do you consult parents or child psychologists to come up with plots and characters? Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, massive amount of research, even to the point of what colours are used, how quick the frame rate is, how long the storyline is, if there's repetitive elements. I mean, to build a kind of Nickelodeon product is multiple experts and really deep diving into what children want and what's good for them. We
are family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Delighted to be joined in the studio by Tracy Grant. She is the VP of Content and Channels, Middle East at Viacom International Media Networks in the MENA region. And we're talking about content, both online and on your TVs. And I wanted to ask you, you know, my kids love watching TV, but they also love what we call rubbish, which tends to be YouTube-based. Video content has exploded across social media and in general how we entertain ourselves now. Apps and streaming sites. I'm just wondering how you've adapted that change and kind of what's been happening maybe behind the scenes to stay current and kind of move things forward yourselves.
Sure. I mean, yes, there is massive change, but I would counter that outside of the rubbish, there is some amazing things online that people can access. They can find communities that resonate with them. Mm-hmm. They can find education.
This is going to sound really silly, but before I went to Kilimanjaro, I spent quite a few evenings watching on YouTube people that had done it.
There we go.
But it genuinely helped. It helped me prepare going, okay, that's what it's going to look like. That's what he packed. You know, this is what she's saying about. It was hugely, hugely helpful.
Absolutely. And if you find content that resonates with you, it kind of doesn't matter where you access it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, when you're a young mom, you want to find out about, you know, sleeping schedules or I don't mm-hmm. know. And if you're going to climb a mountain, you want to know what the best boots are. Or so I think that, you know, there's opportunity in every kind of platform. And outside of our, you know, really successful TV channels, we have app-based content. We have websites and we also run social media channels. And VidCon is a Viacom brand.
Yeah, so VidCon is coming to the capital next week. It is from, well, it's going to be this week, 3rd. It's going to be kicking off over the weekend. Some really big names in terms of content creators, influencers, and also some of the platforms themselves are going to be there. When VidCon is kind of conceptualised and thinking about coming to the region, who do you have in mind coming through the doors, Tracy?
I mean, I think for VidCon that's on this weekend, there's kind of three tracks that are broken down, right? So we have a community track where all the fans, it's the fans of that online content, that environment that we kind of know about in our own niches, but maybe not the wider elements. We have the creator track. So we're bringing 90 creators to Abu Dhabi this weekend. And it's really the creator track is really to connect people that want to make content, want to understand how to do it better, how to monetize, how to find their audience, mm-hmm. how to build authentic stories, can understand from the experts. And those experts that ordinarily are on a screen will be in real life, which is huge. It brings everybody together. And then, as you say, the industry track, which is, you know, the head of creator content for YouTube. We've got Snapchat and TikTok there that are talking about how you can best use those platforms, how you can, you know, provide the best moments for your audience, how to have authentic stories to tell.
It's quite amazing, isn't it, to think that, you know, your kids, almost definitely my kids, are going to be so much more involved in this space and probably making it their careers in a way that we never could have even imagined.
Yeah, 10 my 10-year-old says, "Oh, can I video this game I'm playing on my you know, machine and upload it?" And he thinks by some magic he'll have 10 million followers and a whole career
hey,
based
listen,
on that.
He goes to VidCon, he might meet people who teach him how to do that.
There we go. Yeah.
Tickets still available?
They are still available. Go to vidcon.com/Abu Dhabi.
Thank you so much for your time, Tracy. Really, really appreciate it.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So news of a travel ban from certain countries broke over the weekend, and it is all because of a new COVID-19 variant. Many people travelling for holidays, many people having family coming here for the holidays and wondering now how safe it is to travel. Joining us live on the line now is Dr. Michael Loops, a consultant paediatrician. Dr. Michael, lovely to have you with us. How are you, sir?
Thanks, Helen. I'm very good. Good. No problems at all.
Good. You're always such a reassuring voice in the clinic, and I'm glad to have you on air. So let's kind of discuss what we know, because a lot of families have made plans to travel overseas, and there are concerns about this new variant. For those that have come to you for advice, what are you telling them?
All right. Well, the thing is that everything is so new. Mm-hmm. You know, this first sample of this virus was taken on only the 9th of November. And the sequence of the mutations was only uploaded onto the public domain database on the 26th, so 22 days ago. What's worrying everybody is not that this has created worse disease, because there's no evidence that it has. It's just that it's got 30 new mutations. So it's changed sufficiently that people are asking questions, could this be more pathogenic? Could this evade the vaccine protection, or could it evade even the protection of a previous corona infection? And those are good questions for which there are no answers at mm-hmm. the moment.
And I
but
think
there's certainly... Carry on.
No, and I think that's why many people are kind of spinning out. It's taking us back to 18 months ago, where so much was unknown about COVID-19 in terms of, as you say, how effective vaccines would be, you know, measures that need to be taken. And I think that's why WhatsApp was exploding on my phone over the weekend, and why I think a lot of people are looking at changing their holiday plans. But can I ask, as a obviously very much a non-doctor, is this not just the nature of viruses, that they're always going to be mutating, and this is going to be probably part of our lives for probably a foreseeable future, despite our best efforts?
No, absolutely. I mean, what because viruses multiply relatively rapidly, what you can see is a kind of sped up type of evolution. So each time a virus mutates, if it mutates in a way that is of no advantage to it, it won't survive. Mm-hmm. But if it can mutate in a way that's of some advantage, where it can evade your immune system or it can spread more easily, then it will survive. So this is reality. Now, obviously, our concerns are we still protected? And the truth is, we don't know. There are people, certainly in some of the European studies, or, you know, I'm talking about half a dozen patients, there are people who are known to have been vaccinated and who are known even to have been boosted who have got this variant. To the best of our knowledge, there's nobody that's very sick. In fact, the majority of people in the UK and in Germany are actually quarantining at home, many of whom are actually asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. So it could be that the vaccine is still working very nicely, but from protecting you from getting very sick, but it's just not totally able to stop you getting the new strain. So that's why there's no need to panic. I would say that probably in terms of people's holidays, the biggest risk isn't so much the actual virus itself, but it's the decisions countries are going to make to try to protect themselves. And it would be situations where you might find yourself or your relatives stranded. You know, for example, in South Africa, the folks from the UK who've arrived in South Africa are looking at having to quarantine when they go home at about £2,700 per person. Quarantine. So family of four, you're looking at over £10,000.
Holidays just got very expensive.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
exactly.
is.
Well, one family was saying that the quarantine was going to cost them more than their holiday. So I think if you travel, one needs to have potentially insurance to mm-hmm. look after the fact that you might have to be quarantined. I think you need to be aware that there is a possibility that you might get stuck in a country for up to 10 days, 14 days, depending on how things unfold. You might get to a country and get turned around and sent home again. And these are more political decisions based upon
yes.
how things are evolving, as opposed to pure medical. Because the medical stuff's only going to take another 14 days before we get a rough idea of what's going on in terms of, does it evade the vaccine? Is it more transmissible? This is coming, you know, and it's only in about 14 days, and we'll have this information.
Dr. Michael, thank you. And I really hope I just, my heart honestly just goes out to South Africa. It really does. And I think in terms of clarity, there's lots of misinformation around about this being a South African variant. That's absolutely not the case. This is something that's been discovered by scientists in South Africa. And, you know, I know you guys have taken such a hard hit, and I really hope that everyone is able to travel over Christmas and over the holidays. And we will, of course, be keeping you up to date here on Dubai Eye 103.8. And Dr. Michael Lubser, thank you for your reassurances as ever. As you say, this could be a political and practical problem, perhaps more than a health problem. But we will know more.
And the last sort of throwaway is that because we don't know, we need to wear masks, avoid crowds, wash hands, and get vaccinated. Until we know where we're going, let's be super cautious. That's all. That's all the governments are doing, and that's all people can do.
Well said, indeed, Dr. Michael Lubser. Thank you so much for your time speaking there from Genesis Clinic. And as I said, we'll be keeping you up to date through the ARN News Centre and through the app too.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Earlier in the year, five-year-old Kiara Kaur set a world record for reading 36 books non-stop for 105 minutes. She is, of course, a passionate reader who's read now more than 2,000 books. And now she's become the world's youngest TEDx speaker. Kiara will soon release her own first book. It's called Diary of a Five-Year-Old Genius Chatterbox Who Set Records. Kiara and her mother, Dr. Mahendra, joining us now from Abu Dhabi on Microsoft Teams. Kiara, how are you?
I'm good, Helen. It's nice to see you again.
It's so nice to have you on the show. I just love your energy. I love how much you love reading. Can you tell us a little bit more about that world record you said? 36 books in 105 minutes. Can you tell us some of the books that you read in that time?
Well, I like reading books, and it's my favorite hobby. I also used to share my stories with others. I also love to read books. Whenever my mom says to say books, I get excited to read them.
Do you have a favorite one that you've read again and again?
Yeah, I used to read that sometimes. I also love to read that every time. I also read to use them in the I used to read in the doctor's office, the police station, anywhere, even in the washroom. I also used to read a book called Alice in Wonderland, Shooting Star, Robin Hood, and so many other stories.
Oh, Kiara, it's so nice to hear your passion for this. And tell us, what does it feel like to know that you've got a world record, that your name is in the record books? That must feel pretty special.
Yeah, I feel good because we're a world record. I also like breaking more records, so I can win more and more, and I can get more certificates, trophies. I also love getting trophies because
so do my kids. They love trophies and medals. It's really motivating. But also, you're doing something that you love, and you must have learned so much from reading all these books. You've now written your own one. As I said, it's called Diary of a Five-Year-Old Genius Chatterbox, and your mum typed up the words, but this book is
it's
a chronicle.
A biography.
I love this.
Chatterbox.
How long did it take to finish?
It took 7 hours.
Good for you. Months. Good for you. Okay, now here's my question. You're on the radio now with me, but you've also become the world's youngest TEDx speaker. Do you get nervous talking in front of people?
No, I never get nervous talking to people. I love talking to people. Because I'm always talkative.
I need some tips. Even though I'm on the radio, public speaking makes me really, really nervous. Kiara, when you get older, have you thought about what you'd like to do? Is there a job that you would love?
I like being a doctor, a scientist. I like being a doctor most of the times also. Whenever I be a doctor, I want to treat patients as well, like being a gynecologist, a cardiologist, and more doctors. I love doctors. I also became the doctor when I was young.
I love it. These are words that I don't think many five-year-olds know, and you've already got your eyes on the prize. Kiara, I've got a firm belief that you'll be able to do whatever you put your mind to, and I think your parents are really got a lot to be proud of, and we're speaking to Kiara's mum next, five-year-old Kiara. She's written a book, she's read more than 2,000, and she's now the world's youngest TEDx speaker. As I said, we love celebrating children, youth, teens who are doing something special. It could be academic, but it could be charity. It could be something in their spare time that you think the whole of Dubai should know about. So if you've got someone in mind, let me know on 4001.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We've just been hearing from five-year-old Kiara. She's a record breaker. She's also a TEDx speaker. And speaking to us now is Dr. Little Mahendra. Kiara's mum, she's the ex-dean of the Maktoum Bin Hamdan Dental College here in Dubai. And I am so eternally impressed by your daughter, Doctor. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Helen. Thank you. Thank you so much. How about you?
I'm well, thank you. I really am. But her vocabulary is just incredible. Her love of reading just absolutely shines through. When did Kiara first express an interest in reading? How old was she?
She was two. She has been watching her grandparents reading since the age of two. So I would say that her grandparents are her main inspiration, because my mom is a gynecologist and she used to read a lot. My dad was an army officer. He's an ex-army officer. So she used to watch them reading lots of books, magazines, newspapers. So that's how she got interested in reading. And, you know, she used to be very excited seeing any colorful pictures in the magazine or in the newspaper.
I think what really stands out for me is that she clearly has fun with it. You know, it's a genuine passion. It doesn't feel like a chore to her. How important do you think that enjoyment factor is for any parents out there who are worried that their kids maybe aren't reading as much as they'd like?
I think as a family, we feel that we should never push the child in something in which they are not interested in. I have seen Kiara, you know, she's interested in reading magazines or seeing colorful pictures, and knowingly, she wants to know about everything. She used to be very curious, asking me lots of questions.
I have two of those.
Like, very, very curious child. And the only thing what, as a mother, I could do my part is to answer her patiently and answer her in such a way that she gets all her answers.
Now, as I said, she's now a TEDx speaker. How did that opportunity come about?
Actually, there was an event in Maharashtra, India. So those people have gone through her news earlier that she has set a record in reading. So they felt it's really inspiring for the other kids to know, or the people to know about it. So they just sent an invitation for her to speak on the stage, and she was really excited. And
no nerves, not a flicker about talking on national radio. Clearly loved every second of the TEDx talk. What was she talking about?
She spoke on unboxing curiosity and how she was like, how her curiosity has been an inspiration for her to read books. So, and how her parents helped her in unboxing her curiosity and answer her all her questions.
Oh, you must be so proud. You really, really must. I can see big smiles. And what was the writing process like? As I said, she's got her own book coming out soon. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when she set a record in February for reading, so she has been asking me lots of questions. So I wanted to ask her, do you want to pen down your experiences? Because you have lots of experience, every day-to-day experience, or in your school, in your playground, or in your swimming lessons. So she told, yes, I would love to pen down. So would you help me? I told, okay. So you keep on telling whatever you feel like about your life and your day-to-day experience, so I'll pen it down. So I just typed it, and it took almost 7 months. So the book is going to be released within a month then.
Well, huge congratulations to you both. Looking forward to getting our hands on that. Dr. Little, thank you so much for your time. And congratulations again to Kiara. If there is a young person in your life that you think deserves celebrating and, you know, really has a story to share, please do let us know. 4001, this is your platform, your station. And we always love uncovering some incredible people, young and old, I should say, whether it's academic or charity or just with a story to tell.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Time for a catch-up now with Enhance Academy and Alexandra joining us to tell us a little bit about our competition winner, Roxy, whose wedding was recently after she went on that transformation journey after winning a pretty incredible giveaway right here on Dubai Eye. Alex, I also want to pick your brains a little bit about the upcoming festive season, which is when many people kind of lose their way a little bit on the food and fitness front. But let's start with Roxy. She's obviously finished now her time with you. So it was a month of personal training sessions, nutrition, meal plans. What was the feedback that you heard?
So she is actually so happy with the results. The best part is that she really, really enjoyed the journey. So she had a lot of fun in her sessions, and she actually isn't done. So she's taking a bit of off time because of her wedding, and then she will go back to the program and continue.
Oh, that's a good sign.
That's great news.
And that kind of break, I think a lot of people give themselves a hard time about taking a week off training or a month, and then it can be harder to get back. But actually, your body can really feel the benefits of a bit of time away from training, recover and come back stronger.
What we usually tell our clients is that even if you look at professional athletes, they would actually have scheduled the periods of time during the year where they actually take complete time off. So then when you come back, you will actually come back more motivated and stronger physically as well.
What about the food front? Because she had nutrition consultation with you guys and also meal plans as well. When we spoke, she said she was kind of dreading it, thinking it was going to be, you know, steamed chicken breast and broccoli all the time, but was pleasantly surprised.
So the food went very good, actually. She started feeling more fresh and more energetic, and she was even surprised that she could have burgers and potatoes. That's something that she didn't expect. So this was also included in her diet plan. So it's only the portions that we were monitoring, basically, but she didn't feel hungry at all. And what the dietitian was really working with her on is to follow her hunger signals. So eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. So she was actually very, very happy with the food.
Now, I think that's a really interesting point as we get into this festive season. We all know we should be eating a bit more mindfully. But then, you know, there's nibbles and canapes and you go to a party or it's a brunch. Can you explain a little bit more about the importance of kind of checking in with yourself rather than being like an unsupervised child at a birthday party?
So it's really normal, and I just actually came across really interesting data recently that most of adults would gain between 0.5 kilogram up to 2 kilograms, and this is usually during November and December festive season, so this is on average what happens. So I would say you should enjoy, definitely. Give yourself some time to enjoy the food, enjoy the quality time with your friends and family, but also check in with yourself, so try to eat a bit more slower. And another trick that you can use is try to eat from smaller plates, because this would make it seem like you're actually having more. And then at the end of the day, it's just being present and mindful and slowing down, because you will get to enjoy the whole atmosphere of the holidays as well.
I think, and this is the thing, no one wants to be miserable. No one wants to be counting calories at every single meal. But yeah, checking in. Smaller plate. I like the sound of that. As long as you're not having to take it with you everywhere, that gets a bit awkward. turning up to a restaurant with your own plate. And what about advice for anyone? And I know we haven't started the new year yet, but people looking ahead to maybe getting some intentions in place on the fitness front and maybe the food front as well. But feel like they could be setting themselves up for failure, because that's been their story. That's always been the case. It's, you know, do great for the first week of January and then fall well and truly off the wagon a couple of weeks later. Any advice for people who want to make a big change but might be nervous about it?
I would say, again, check in with yourself and try to set goals that are really meaningful for you and do something that is exciting. So if you set a goal that you just feel that you should be doing, but you're not really excited about it, it can backfire. And then another good mental trick that you can use is having yourself accountable. So getting a workout buddy or getting somebody who can actually keep you accountable, like a gym partner or like a person that will be on the journey with you.
Will be on the WhatsApp with you saying, where are you? You're supposed to be at the beach track 10 minutes ago. But I think that's a really good point. You know, when we think about people undergoing a transformation, people think about having to sign up for 5 boot camp sessions a week, and it's so far from the truth for the vast majority of us. Most of it is a case of working in maybe 3 workouts a week, and it doesn't have to be in a gym. It could be a sport that you want to reconnect with or learn something for the first time, get better at something like swimming. And that's something obviously that you guys at Hans are really good at, matchmaking people to disciplines and sports and experts as well. Can you give us a quick rundown how best to get in touch with you and the team?
Yes, so Enhanced Fitness, we are available on Google Play and Apple Store. You can just type in Enhanced Fitness and you will find the application. You can register simply by adding your full name, mobile number, and then our team will get in touch with you to arrange a free session. So the first session is completely free of charge and we will match you with a trainer that best suits your needs.
That was Alex of Enhanced Fitness Academy. Our winner, Roxy, doing amazingly well as her month-long training program and eating plan comes to an end. She also got married a week ago, so congratulations.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can tune in to Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.